This verse by Yamunacharya is an expression of joy. Oh, okay, thank you, Hare Krishna. He's expressing his joy. He's saying, when will I be in such a position to be fully satisfied in the service of you? But from his joyful expression, and from his whole life, it's very clear that he is situated in the service to Krishna, which is the constitutional, blissful situation of the living being, the perfectly happy position, as compared to the perfectly unhappy condition of this material world, in which everyone wants to be happy. Everything everyone does at every moment is simply meant for them to be happy. But they simply go on hoping life after life. So after many, many lives, if one comes to the position of serving Krishna, who is the fully competent master, who is the fully compassionate master, then we feel fully satisfied. Otherwise, we cannot be satisfied. So it's simply how to attain happiness. This is the real question. There's that saying, the $64 million question. And I guess $64 million was worth more those days than it is now. Nowadays people talk in billions and trillions and quadrillions. So what is the real question? How to be happy? It's not really how to get more money or how to get free from your backache or how our team will win the cup, whatever kind of sport you may be a follower of. But the underlying question is how to be happy. And even if we think we can arrange a position to be happy in this world, there's one big problem, and it's that we have to die. And although it's generally considered taboo to speak about death, we should speak about it because we all have to face it. And we say we don't know what happens after that, but we can find out. Because we don't know doesn't mean that we can't know. There is knowledge about that. So, how to be happy, fully, eternally, without any obstruction to our happiness, and without causing harm to others. Often what people construe as happiness is some means by which, wittingly or unwittingly, they cause harm to others. So, purity, that is also required. Purity of thought, purity of action. How to achieve that? What is it? This is what we're all looking for. In this material world, here this Yamunacharya praying to Krishna says, when will I be satisfied to be in your service? Sanata jivitam. I will live with a master. Now generally we think that if I don't have a master, I can be happy. If I am the master of everything, I can be happy. If we daydream of how we can be happy, we may think how I will be the dictator of the whole world and whatever I want, everyone will run around trying to get it done for me. But we find that even people with facility to enjoy themselves, they have big houses, big cars, big bank balance, big ego, and they're not happy. So, why is that? Why should anyone be unhappy if they have big house, big car, and click their fingers and someone brings a glass of wine or whatever they want? Well, underlying the consciousness of everyone in this world is a sense of fear by which one can never be happy. just like we've heard it said, that someone who is to be executed the next morning, they say the day before, what would you like for your last meal? As if you could enjoy it. If you know that next morning you're going to be taken out and shot. So, what would you like to eat? It won't even have time to get fully digested and passed out the other side. So how are you going to enjoy? Bring all the things that you want to eat, and but how are you going to enjoy if you're going to be shot dead the next morning? So that's there in the back of everyone's mind, that we have to die, and we're always in fear because of that. And not only that, but because under even someone who's very confident and very sure of themselves, and they seem to be in a very secure position, they have lots of money, but they also feel insecure. They try to make their position secure, but anything can happen at any time. You don't know what's going to happen. There's one of the richest men in the world in Russia. He's in prison now. He seemed to be secure, but he wasn't. Hitler might have seemed very secure, but he wasn't. Or even people who die peacefully in their beds, then no position is secure. Anything can happen at any time. Just like you were in Prague in 1968, and one morning you woke up and the city was full of Russian tanks, and no one expected it. But all of a sudden, happy life had ended. And it may be earthquake. I guess you don't get earthquakes much around here. But the very earth that you're standing on, and we don't think twice about walking here and there, but if there's an earthquake, you don't know where to go. The house which you take as your shelter, it becomes the most dangerous place to be in. You have to get out because it'll fall on you and kill you. And you can't stand still, you can't go anywhere. If you stand still, the earth may just open up and it's all... You can't stand still, literally, if the earth is shaking. So like that, anything can happen at any time, and you just don't expect it. No one wakes up in the morning and thinks, today I'm going to have a car accident and I'll be... incapacitated? What's the word? For life? Crippled for life. Or that I'll die. But it happens to thousands of people every day. No one ever thinks it'll happen to me. They think the seatbelt is something you have to wear in case the police catch you. And if we're in a side street, you don't have to bother wearing it. But because no one thinks it will happen to me. I can drive as fast as I like. Famous Irish pastime in the country roads, driving extremely fast on bending roads, extremely dangerous. But no one thinks that I will be in the newspaper tomorrow morning for having become another statistic. But in the back of our mind, we all know it has to happen. We'll take severe risks as if to defy what we know must happen, that we have to die, or even the position that we've created or we find ourselves in. Partially we find ourselves in, partially we created ourselves that it's secure. So this is the world of fear. This world, this material world, is defined as the world of fear. Bhayam dvitiya bhinivesita syat ishadapetasya vipariyo smritihi. This world is the world of fear because we have turned away from Krishna, who is the supreme controller, and that we're trying to be secure by ourselves. But if we consider what is our position, we are infinitesimal. We're tiny little beings on a tiny little planet, and who knows how vast the universe is. And We take ourselves to be very important, but we're infinitesimal. And we're up against so many forces. We try to manipulate our situation or try to make a comfortable situation, or by science, the scientific mythology, which some people still believe in, is that science is going to make the world wonderful and we'll conquer over... We remember they used to say we'll conquer over nature. I don't think they say that anymore. At least they should have been somewhat humbled by now, the idea to conquer over nature. But the fact is that we are tiny living beings and there are forces far more powerful than us that we simply cannot resist. And they do not act in the way that we want to, and they generally act in ways that we don't want to. We don't want to die. We don't want to get sick. We don't want to get old. We don't want to be distressed in any way, but circumstances force that upon us. So, the intelligent question, $64 million and much more dollars question, is how to be happy? Or how can we be happy in a situation that seems made to make us unhappy? We can't find happiness. Or is there happiness? Well, this verse, this prayer of Yamuna Acharya gives the answer that yes, we become happy when we find the right shelter, the shelter who can actually protect us, and we feel very blissful to be their servant. And no one in this material world wants to be a servant. Everyone wants to be the master. But it is an impossible hope. We can be the master to a small extent. That's why people like to have a dog, and they have a feeling that I am the master, I am in charge. This dog does whatever I say according to his capacity. When I say sit, he says sit, and he licks me, and I'm happy. So you can be a master of a dog, or maybe you can be master of a whole country, although not everyone in the country may accept to be part of the country, like in Northern Ireland for so many years. Approximately 1/3 of the population thought they'd rather be with the rest down there, over the border. You can be the master of your family. You think so? At least when the kids are small, they look up to you like God. But when they get older, they see you're not God. And they're not so dependent on you as they were when they were very small. And then gradually, they don't care for you at all. So we can have the illusion of being a master, but the fact is that we're very small, and we need to have a master who can. If we are to be happy, we need someone who can shelter us from fear, from death. So this is the discovery of Yamuna Acharya, that we'll be very happy if we simply identify ourselves in our proper position, as in our actual position as the servant of Krishna, who is the supreme controller and the supreme friend. And there's no other way to be happy, because if we don't identify that, then we identify with our material position. I am Irish, I am Protestant or Catholic, I am a man, I am a woman, this is my wife, this is my husband, this is my house. We identify with all of this, and it gives us a sense of security. It's like a matrix that we identify ourselves with. And it seems secure because, well, ever since I was born, I've been living in this house, and ever since I was born, this person has been my father, and there's been my mother, and marriage, of course, not so stable as it used to be, but it's supposed to be, or used to be, for life. And everything seems to be fitting into place nicely, and it seems to be eternal, and it seems as if it might go on forever, but of course it doesn't. And even within this lifetime, it's very common in the modern Asia. The people, they don't live in one house for their whole life. They switch residence. I think in America the average is about 7 times in one life that people switch their residence. And then you get people like me and who are asked, where do you live? And the answer is, well, wherever I am today, because I don't really have a fixed residence. And there are many people like that. I mean, apart from gypsies or whatever they're called nowadays, there are businessmen who are just, they're constantly traveling. Business people, I guess you're supposed to say these days. Businessmen or women or something like that. So, we identify with our reality as being everything as we perceive it. But just, we should consider, this is just a tiny little blip in time. And we are eternal beings. And we've had so many lives, and we may have so many more in future. Of course, many people don't accept this. And they think, well, you're born now, and then you die, and then it's all finished. But that helps to reinforce the illusion that this, what I am, is me. This body is me. Although the body itself is also changing, and it won't last. You can look at someone of my age, can find a photo 30 years ago, and looks the same somewhat, but there's definite change there. So many lines on the face have come, and you can try and cover them up with some cream or some powder or something, but even if it looks good on the outside, still it's rotting away on the inside. So we make an identity, but which we think is me, and we think this is reality. We feel some security in that. That's why people, they often get thrown out, discombobulated, is the American word, for... if they go to somewhere where the culture is completely different, culture shock. Just like people may go from here to India, and when people want to indicate yes, they go like this, which in this side of the planet, it means no. And then you think, well, these people, they're stupid. But they're not stupid, it's just a different culture, that's all. But because we think that the way we have been raised, that must be the right thing. And therefore we get thrown out. We see people eating with their hands, as is the culture in India. And we think, well, that's savage. That's primitive. Or sitting on the floor. Why don't they sit on chairs? Because we think, well, we should do that because everyone does that, at least where I come from. And where I come from must be the best because that's where I come from. And it must be the best, it must be right. And so, yeah, everyone thinks like that. My country is the best. Northern Ireland is the best. Iceland is the best. Spain is the best. Zimbabwe is the best. Whatever. Everyone thinks. Janani janma bhumischa. Swargameva gariyashi. My mother, the saying is, my mother and my motherland are more glorious than heaven. So everyone thinks like that. We take shelter of a certain identity, and then we think that this is better. And we feel secure in that. And then culture shock means we feel insecure. We don't know how to interact with people. And we think that if we do something that would be considered good in one country, it would be considered bad in another. Just like in this country, if you go like this, that means, yeah, very good, something positive. But in India, that's considered rude. It's considered vulgar. So... And then we can't understand why are these people getting upset, and What's wrong with them? There's nothing wrong, it's just they're a different culture, that's all. So we take shelter of a certain identity, and the whole culture is built up in different areas and among different people, by which we identify with. And if we don't like the prevailing culture, then there are subcultures. You could become, I don't know what it is nowadays, used to be Hell's Angels, and what else do they have? It's the same kind of thing, some kind of violent, semi-violent people. So we take shelter of some cult, we identify with a group of people who we think will protect us, that we have an identity which, this is me. But no one can protect us. No one in this world can protect us. Even though we may feel very strong and very secure, we're a member of a guild, or we're a member of a gang, or we're a member of a club or whatever, and we associate with these people and they all think the same way, and so we think they all talk in the same kind of way, they all have the same kind of mannerisms, and therefore we think, oh, this is everything here is very secure and solid, and we all know what we're doing, but no one can protect us. That example is given by Prahlad Maharaj. He says that, what is that? Nartasya chagadam udanvati majan balasya neha sharanam pitaro nrsimha. A child thinks that the parents can protect them. They're quite confident of that, but they cannot. They have very limited scope to protect. Years ago, I remember I was on a plane between, I can't remember which way I was going, in between Bangladesh and Burma. It was during the, must have been around this time of year, the monsoon season. And there was a heavy storm, and the plane was going up and down and up and down like this in the air, and it seemed like it could have been thrown out of the air and smashed to the ground at any time. So there's one young couple from England sitting next to me, and the woman, she took the hand of the man and he patted her hand like this, as if to reassure her. But there's nothing he could do to help her if the plane did fall out of the sky. I mean, he might make her feel good as she's hurtling down to smash into the ground, but he can't actually help her, that's all. Don't worry, I'm here. Well, what can you do? So this is the false sense of protection. Balasya ne sharanam pitaro nartasya chagadam udanvati majjato. No, in a ship on the ocean cannot protect us. We may think they have a very good ship, the Titanic, that really fulfilled the words of Prahlad Maharaj spoken so many millions of years ago, the unsinkable ship. The theists must have had a good time when it sunk on its first voyage. To say an unsinkable ship is it's like a defiance of God. That we have created something which nature cannot overcome. It's impervious to nature. It's like a declaration. We have conquered nature. There's nothing that the sea or anything can do to sink this ship. And of course, it hit an ice cube, and an oversized ice cube. And well, one thing is, it's been famous ever since. So those who are on the Titanic can have the post-mortem honor of being remembered. They didn't all die. Anyway, taptasya tat trividhir ihasanja seishtas. Then the medicine cannot protect someone who is sick. You can bring medicine, it might not work. You bring the best medicine, best doctor. You can, if someone's scheduled to die, you can bring the best doctors in the world and the best medicine, but if they're going to die, they're going to die. There's nothing you can do. to stop it. And there are so many cases that doctors abandon as hopeless cases, not even worth treating them. They won't survive until the next morning. And the next morning, they come to the bed and they see it's empty and they say, oh, you took it away already? We're going to do a post-mortem. No, he walked up and went out by himself. There's so many cases like that. So we can try and protect or give some help, but ultimately everything is in the hands of God. And the real doctors, they understand that they are an instrument who can assist. That's all. But ultimately everything is in the hand of God. And the atheistic doctors think, well, see, I cured so many people. So ultimately, there is no protection but Krishna. And that is being stated here. If we take shelter of anything else, or anyone else but Krishna, no one can protect us. In the modern age especially, people are extremely confused. Because security, where is security? This terrorism has brought the fear to every situation. Where will you go? Send the kids to school. See, so they can have a good future. But the school, they're not safe also. They're not safe from the other kids. Who are you going to leave them with? A babysitter. You can't let the kids out to play. You keep them at home, and then they can grow up with computer games. It's like insecurity for the mind. Just make them into the kind of person that you have to protect others from. So there's no security. Even the food you eat, you think of good, healthy, nourishing food, where is it? If you want it, you have to grow it yourself. And you might be forbidden by the government to do so. The situation is coming like that. Where is security? It's a very disturbed age. And that's one reason why people are becoming more and more disturbed. And mental disease is just what used to be called mental disease, just something normal. I saw some statistic in America, 70% of the people during their life seek psychiatric help. The other 30%, well, either they needed it and they didn't, or they're on the borderline. It means the whole country's crazy. And that's just considered normal. And people take shelter of drugs. If you're like hyperactive, there are drugs to down you, and there are drugs to make you feel good. And drugs like that, they used to be made by moonlighters and sold illegally. But now it's just normal that people take all kinds of drugs just to alter your mental state. But that also, none of these drugs, consciousness-altering drugs, none of them are without side effects. It may be that the side effect is discovered later, or it may be that it happens right away. But it's not the shelter. There's no happiness in a pill, even though there's one pill called ecstasy. But it's not ecstasy. It's a very poor, I mean, I haven't tried it, but I don't intend to try it either. It's a pill, right, I guess? Is it? Yeah, it's a pill. So it's a very poor substitute for actual happiness. Some sense of euphoria must be there, which lasts for a short time and then fades away. And that's typical of all happiness in this material world. But people don't have any information of anything but that. And so they take shelter of that more and more. Kamam ashrita dushpuram. They take shelter of their desires because they don't know anything else but, well, we have material, we have so many desires, let's try and fulfill them. And at least for a short time, we'll be happy. But their general state of consciousness just becomes more and more and more and more disturbed. So the whole idea that we shall be happy in this material world, we shall be happy fulfilling our desires, it's the great illusion on which the whole world is running on. And sometimes people think, well, we'll do meditation and calm down, and then we'll, well, there's some kind of relief from the turmoil of grossly trying to fulfill material desires one after the other. By meditation, one can get some kind of relief from that. Or it's like the relief, something like the relief of going to sleep, which it's, that's something else some people take shelter of. They just go to sleep, that's all. They just like to sleep. Sleep as much as they can, because being awake is just more painful than being asleep. So they just sleep for hours and hours and hours. But that is also, that's not happiness. That position of actual happiness, what is that? When we are sheltered, if we accept, we can understand, we should accept that we are very, very, very tiny little beings. But we have very strong desires to be happy. But it's not possible in this material world to find full happiness eternally. But the very fact that we desire it indicates that we are meant for that. And so we have information, we have these books of spiritual knowledge, which give us that information of how we can, what is our actual position of happiness, and how to attain that. It's just a matter of consciousness. Instead of thinking, I am this body, and I am meant to enjoy my situation, wherever I am, whatever it's in, just recognizing that there is a supreme transcendental controller who, if we serve him, then we'll be happy. That's all. And then how to serve him? Service means we have to know what he wants us to do. So that information of Krishna is given in these books, may loosely be called as God, although the word God has so many implications. The English word God has so many implications. Generally, in the Western world, God is thought of as someone who, if you believe in him, then you're saved. Otherwise, the majority of people get chucked into an inferno forever. So, doesn't sound like such a nice person, or someone, you know, what if he has some whim at some time and he might just throw you too? If he's such a person and throws you into hell forever. Sounds pretty severe. Fortunately, Krishna, he doesn't do that, but he is the supreme loving person, and the happiness that we crave is in loving relationship with Krishna. Love means reciprocation. So Krishna is not an idea or simply a light, but a person who we can all reciprocate with. We can feed Krishna, we can be fed by Krishna. These are loving exchanges. We can dress Krishna, we can sing to Krishna, we can sing with Krishna. Personal exchanges of love with full confidence that Krishna is our benefactor. He has no bad motive, he has nothing to get from us, desire to exploit us. So this is the position of joy of a devotee who discovers, after so many births of seeking happiness in so many different ways, that simply I am meant for Krishna. And if I simply agree to act in his service, I'll be fully satisfied forever. Whereas material desires, however much I try to fulfill them, even if I do fulfill them, I will never be satisfied. So this is being expressed here. Hare Krishna. That's all. That's a basic overview of how to be happy. It's amazing how many people never really think about even how to be happy. They think about so many other things. But what I need to get a new car, or I need to do, but actually the real underlying question, what do I have to do to be happy forever? Remember, we just accept what the society or the culture that we're born into dictates to us as being what should be done to attain happiness. So if you're a man, you should have a good, strong body and look pretty tough. And if you're a woman, you should wear certain fashions, and that will make you happy. These kind of ideas are there. But the real thing is not to have a strong body or a beautiful body, but to be happy. And that might... That doesn't pertain to the body. So, Hare Krishna. Any question about this? Or comments? Yes, please.
You mentioned about the pills, the psychiatric hospital. I used to be a psychiatric nurse years ago. And the one thing that always used to amuse me was that they give you a pill.
Yeah.
And you would have, you mentioned... You mentioned the side effects. Yeah. They give another pill to offset the side effects.
They give you one pill, and then they give another pill to offset the side effects, and then and it goes on and on and on.
And the
end result is that you get depressed, and then they give you back to the original pill. So it all goes. So it all goes round in a circle. My mother was. She spent the last 15 years or so of her life in a psychiatric hospital. I used to go and see her, and 1 week she'd be in one mood, and another week another mood, according to whatever pills they were testing out on her, or I guess they thought it was their duty to give her something or other. I always thought she was better off without any pills. I mean, it wasn't that good, but the pills didn't seem to make it any better. So it's pill culture. We're living in pill culture.
One interesting... doing chanting Sankirtan and myself and Pramana, but the basically I was doing a fast and I was coming off the fast and I wasn't hungry we were in Tremor, which is by the sea, and so I just went in the sea and I was about 15-20 minutes in the sea, then I came back out into the van and had a good shower, and then my digestion came back straight away. And Pramana, but he's reading the Bhagavatam, and he actually says, those who bathe
in the sea, it gives you good digestion. Yeah.
And then it just struck me as we were traveling around Ireland that all the rivers, very few of them have public access to bathing. And it's very beneficial. And for psychiatric patients, bathing
in the river is good, is it? Yeah. Yeah, our devotees here years ago, they used to bathe in the rivers, but then the Garda used to come and say, "What the hell are you doing?" He said, "Well, we're bathing. What are you doing at 3:30 in the morning in a river?" They couldn't work it out. Another thing that psychiatric patients in Holland is given is gardening. So if they hadn't made this whole complex society and people are just being left to, I mean, everyone practically does some gardening in traditional society. It's not that everyone's a farmer, but everyone has a kitchen garden. So we might not have had so many nutcases if they're just left to, just left the society instead of trying to make it better by building factories and all this kind of thing. Just grow a few veggies.
This is, I don't know, it is proper Prabhupada speaks about insane people, it was also found that very efficient way to help insane people in the psychiatric hospital is to facilitate them to take care of animals.
Oh, to have them take and care of animals.
Some of the psychiatric hospitals into zoos where they take care of animals because it was found that actually the animals are more sane.
The animals are more sane. Yeah.
Associating with animals makes them more sane. Because the agitation and the psychic agitation came mainly from associating with other people.
With humans society. Who are insane. If they associate with animals, they become more sane. Because animals act like animals. They don't try to be something different or, you know, you don't get punk rock or poodles or, I guess you could do, someone could. But they wouldn't choose it themselves. Ah, what is sanity? That Srila Prabhupada told that story that someone in court, there was a plea of insanity and the so he was given a psychiatric analysis and the psychiatrist said that, yeah, I analyzed him and he's insane. But then, from what I can see, everyone in the world is insane. So if you want, you can let him free on the grounds of insanity. Just like this, what is it, Breivik in Norway?
Oh, very interesting.
So the whole question is, I mean, he's not pretending that he didn't do it, but the whole question is whether he's sane or not. I mean, how could you be sane and do what he did? What do you have to have a psychiatrist to?
But the worst thing is that he is so arguing in a court that even the judge gets confused because he's explaining how he trained himself up his consciousness to a level by separating emotional and rational life, what he calls it, for years up the point that he was able, as he admits, to commit such an extremely cruel act, which was, from his point of view, necessary. He sees it as a political act, not but the way he argues is makes people speechless because they cannot come up with anything to defeat it because he is from a mature point of view.
He's perfectly sane.
Perfectly sane.
He's in control of his faculties more than most people. He knows what he's doing. He has a very deliberate plan of action, but he's insane because no one but an insane person would do such a thing. But it doesn't fit their clinical definition of insanity.
Because it's missing the aspect of spontaneous madness or like that. It's well thought through.
Yeah.
According to his logic.
Yeah.
And then the question arises, what kind of logic they are using? You know, it's just one insanity meeting the other.
Right, right, right. So then this definition is there, that if we don't know actually who we are, then we are insane. And that pertains to everyone, because everyone says, I am Irish, or I am Norwegian, but that is not our eternal identity. We identify with the body, which is only temporary, but we existed before the body, and when this body is gone, we will continue to exist. So someone gets put in the madhouse for saying, I am the Queen of England, when they're not. So I am this body, but you're not. Then we're all mad. There's a story in this regard of Pandit Nehru, the first Prime Minister of India, who visited a madhouse, and one of the I guess you're supposed to call it something different these days. What do you call it? Unusually oriented people's shelter or something like that, as euphemistic as possible. So someone asked, one of the inmates asked Pandit Nehru, who are you? And he said, well, I'm Jawaharlal Nehru, the Prime Minister. And he said, don't say that. He said, I said that and I got put in here. So that's like that. We're all, who are you? Ishvaro Ham Aham Bhogi. I am the Lord of all that I survey. I am happy. I am the enjoyer. And you get clink. put in the madhouse of this material world. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.